sitting at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect. Justice.
Like justice.
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 Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. And protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Services.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression. Expression.
Participation.
Democracy. Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Focus.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good day to our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined again by our co-host Mona Hill. Welcome, Mona.
Thank you. It is so good to be back.
It's been a while.
Happy to be back, yes.
And we're joined today by Julian Bowden-Herney, third-year student at First Nations University of Canada and a member of the University Amnesty International group, who has created a movement calling for Indigenous Studies courses to be mandatory for all University of Regina students. And welcome to Hanum Nur, a member of the University Students Union. Welcome.
Thank you, Jim. Glad to be here.
And we need to add that both Hanum and Juliana are members of Amnesty International group at the university.
Yeah.
Our topic for the day is something I have actually been wanting to talk about for a long time. And for those of you who get the Regina Leader Post, you may have noticed yesterday's newspaper, front page news, is that Julianne Bowden-Herney has started a movement at the university.
Definitely.
Tell us about the start of this movement, Julianne.
The start of it? Well, it all started in a kin class. And this one girl got a feather in her hair, and one of the students responded, "Oh, just like an Indian princess." And so I was going through a little bit of disappointment in Halloween this year as well, when there was a new Indian princess costume that came out. And I didn't even see a single Aboriginal person wearing this costume. In fact, it was all Euro-Canadian white females wearing it, making it look even more scandalous. And so that triggered something huge for me, because it was a lot of frustration, because I thought we were over that, but apparently not.
Why is that scandalous? Tell the listeners about that. What makes wearing a quote-unquote Indian princess costume scandalous?
Well, it's the idea of romanticization that comes from, I'll just go straight to the Pocahontas. I loved the Disney movie Pocahontas, but the character of Pocahontas is displayed to be a figure of all minorities. She is the face of a Filipino. She's very provocative. She has a body like Barbie. And the dress she's wearing has a slit all the way up to, like, where her butt should be. And there's a lot
to... it's very much a stereotype.
Yeah, it's sexualized. It's sexism, racism. It's an ideology that has been carried forth by Disney, right? Mm-hmm. And Disney has set off a lot of controversy throughout his work anyways. So that's part of it.
So then we get to Halloween costumes.
Yeah, and so it's sad, but I guess somebody just wanted to make money and thought this was a good idea, but it was extremely offensive to me. Mm-hmm. As well as a lot of professors I talked to about it. It was brought up in sociology class. It was brought up in my with one of my Indige profs, Bridget Keating, Michelle Segu, and they were really distraught about it because it's sexualization, it's objectifying women. But that image isn't even relevant to Aboriginal history. We never had princesses. This idea of princesses was a European ideology brought over and imposed on them. We never had princesses. It's not something that is relative. So it's quite upsetting.
Okay. So that was the start of it. Mm-hmm. And then where did you take it from there? When this upset you, where did you decide to go?
I actually, when I was leaving class, I passed by J School, Journalism School, in the Ad Hum building at the university. And my cousin, Cretian Ed Chickaday, is actually a journalist student there. And so I was all fired up, and I got angry, and I was like, I need to do something. I'm going to start a petition. And he said, okay. So in a matter of 3 hours, we were studying, and he was on CTV internet and reading all the racist comments about this chief on Yellow Quill Reserve wanting self-governance. And they were just like, oh, well, you know, Indians this and Indians that, they can't self-govern because they can't manage their budget properly. And it was just things that are imposed on the public by the media, right? So it's not that I really blame them for that, but it's something that's so systemic that they don't realize how ignorant they're being, maybe. Or maybe they do. I try my best to expect the best out of people, so...
I think you raise a good point when you talk about public perception and media.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way we learn about our society, if we're not doing specific research and studying of history, does come, for the most part, from the media. So I think you have a very good point there. How did you get involved, Hanim?
So the way I got involved is Julianne actually approached the members of the executive of the Students' Union, and I currently serve as an executive of the Students' Union right now, and that's how we got to know about the petition. And Julianne actually put a motion forward at the U of R Students' Union annual general meeting where the Students' Union would support the petition and basically take the reins from there and work with Julianne in order to get this petition going and getting meetings with the administration and trying to move things forward. So that's how I came to know about the petition. Yeah, it was a great initiative. There was lots of debate at the AGM. Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Julianne can fill you in on some of her responses, actually.
Definitely. I'd also like to add that the First Nations University Students Association is also in support of it.
Okay.
I'm a pending ambassador there right now. I'm waiting for my cousin to get out of the way so I can fill the spot.
Okay, first of all, before you get into that, what does the petition actually say?
All right, it starts off pretty clean cut. It's working to make Indigenous studies mandatory for all courses at the U of R and the Federated Colleges in order to harmonize the relationships between non-Aboriginals and Aboriginals. When I say non-Aboriginal, it's not automatically going to Euro-Canadians, but it's about those who immigrate here who want to be Canadian. So it's involving them as well. Lots of people misconceive that as me leaving them out, but it pretty much involves them. And in addition to that, the knowledge we attain from these classes can be applied to places such as the workplace, school, and home. Home is so critical because I know like dinner conversations. That's where we can change the minds of our families, or help our parents out and our grandparents out, things like that.
So. Right. So then you have this AGM. You've got the petition there.
Yeah.
And it was, I understand, was quite a lively debate.
Yes, I guess yeah. It was.
Yeah.
Maybe Hannum could help me out with this.
Yeah. Basically, the way the Students' Union functions is that we take our mandate from students, and one of the ways that we do this is through the annual general meeting. So when this petition was being, when this motion was being discussed at the table, so many students voiced their concerns. They came up to the mic and said things like, you know what, this extra class is going to be such a burden for me, and it's going to be an extra $500, $600, yada, yada, yada. And also a lot of things, they also voiced a bunch of concerns saying that it would take away from their electives, where I think it's like, for example, every faculty has a bunch of electives that you need to take, mm-hmm. or that requirement that you need to have.
Right.
And every degree program has mandatory requirements. To add this class into your degree program is not only helping you realize the, like, understanding the surroundings that you live in Saskatchewan today, but it also helps you when you go out into the workplace, like Julian said, and into mm-hmm. the homes and things like that. So a lot of comments were, some of them were, I guess they were uninformed about the issues. Like, some people may not be as big thinking as I am, for example. So, I mean, I can't blame them that way. But the fact that the petition is coming forward is showing the fact that we need to educate people, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe then those viewpoints can be changed and people can grow and learn from these things. So that was one of the things I could say about the AGM.
Yeah, one of the comments were made from a guy, and he said, well, if we give this minority a class, we'll have to give Palestinians a class. We'll have to give all these other people a class.
Yeah, so we'll have to give women a class.
Yeah, we'll have to give women a class.
Women
exactly.
Studies. Yeah. We have women's studies already.
Yeah. And why I think Indigenous studies is important, I stood up to the mic after him, and I said, thank you for the resistance for being here, and everybody clapped to that. And I said, without you, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. You have to understand that Indigenous studies applies to Indigenous people all around the world once you get to 200-level class, isn't it? But that's from personal choice, right?
Right.
But inside of there, you'd learn things about racism, sexism, ageism, feminism. In First Nations culture, women are the center of culture. So there's a huge vibrancy there to learn about the diversity of the culture. Mm-hmm. A lot of the deans I'm talking to are talking about how beneficial this education will be in creating an interactive and collective dialogue in classrooms to broaden the perspectives of students. So... yeah, and so I basically said that, and unfortunately I had to stand up for what I believed in, and it was the result in humiliating the resistance, but, you know, without them I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, like I said, so.
You made a good point.
I think the point is that we've been, people like myself, have been living in absolute ignorance from day one. You know, we don't learn about these things, mm-hmm. and we have no opportunity to learn about these things.
They're not proposed to you firsthand, right?
Well, and the textbooks that we learn our history from, mm-hmm. well, you were talking about how, you know, the perspective the books mm-hmm. are written from. So
yeah, well, before the show started, I was telling you how my mother actually told me this last night, how history is written by the victors, right?
Exactly.
So anything that is projected into the future, we are informed of our history here and now. So anything we're taught, we're convinced that residential schools are something of the past, even though the last residential school closed in 96 on Gordon's Reserve. So really, it's something that's alive and well. When I was 5 years old, this mm-hmm. still existed. So the deprivation of our culture, the marginalization of our culture is still alive and well. And that's something I want to bring to light on a student level, and yeah. I'm not liked for it, but...
I would say the average person my age still is woefully ignorant of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're proposing can only help, mm-hmm. you know?
It's more difficult maybe when you're older as well, because your views are so... you're so stuck on what you believe in. Even my own grandmother has her own beliefs, but it's a matter of being in a youthful and lively generation. We have the opportunity, we have the honor to be the change makers, right? We have mm-hmm. the opportunity to bond our nation together so that we can really be proud of a Canada, right, and our nationhood. And this is a critical part of it. I mean, yeah. We have reserves right now in third world conditions, and people aren't knowing about them.
And people pick up, as you talked about earlier, media concepts without having the knowledge, the foresight to maybe say, well, wait a minute, maybe there's more going on here than it's being presented to us publicly.
Mm-hmm.
With that opportunity to have this type of education, people will be far more critically analyze things. I think that's a real big part of it. I went back to school as a very mature adult, speaking as somebody of our age, quote unquote, that, you know, I feel young some days and some days I don't. But, you know, honestly, when I've been thinking about this for a long time. When I took my first Indigenous Studies classes, and back then they were still called Indian Studies, having grown up on the prairies in Winnipeg in the city as a child, I remember distinctly my education about different events on the prairies in the past, historical events with First Nation people and the settlers and the colonizers and the build-up in my mind and the field trips we took to different places where things happened was fed to us as being, yes, what you talked about earlier, as being the Indian people or the savages and the massacres and all those, the rebellions, and all those words were used. Words can be so powerful. So growing up, you just, this is all you think, this is all you have. That's all you have.
Well,
and we're taught to believe our teachers, by the way, when we're young, you know, believe everything they say, and our teachers are teaching from textbooks that don't have a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And when I took my first 100 studies class, I was blown away and so excited to learn about something I had learned about many, many, many years ago from a completely different, from the perspective of not of the victor, you know, but from the perspective of the other parties in this relationship in history, the truth from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a catalyst for my thirst to learn more. And what I discovered was it wasn't just about learning this perspective and this perspective. It was learning about where there are oftentimes many gray areas, and we have to critically analyze history.
Yeah.
It's so important to do that. As you said earlier, I totally agree with you, to make that change so that we can come together and be a better country.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all for this. I think this is a wonderful idea. And I certainly at the same time can understand that there might be people who have negative opinions about it. Because since I announced, I put on Facebook that we were doing a show with you, I had some comments and I had a couple of emails.
Probably.
Yeah.
The negativity, I think it stems from being defensive, right? When somebody gets imposed on and being told that they've been taught something wrong, you're going to be like, well, excuse you, I don't believe in what you say, and yada, yada, yada. And there's lots of things people can come up with. As Hanum said before, the extra cost, there is no extra cost, you know? If it's part of your degree, once it's integrated into your elective, if it's tailored to your degree, like business or engineering.
How would you see that? In what form would you see that tailoring to the various different faculties?
Well, when it comes to art, we could focus on, we have Indian art studies already. When it comes to business, maybe we can focus on specific Aboriginal leaders in business roles.
Okay.
So people who have their own business, people who are CEOs, who are successful, seeing how they have run things, how they've applied university education to gaining their accomplishments, but them being Aboriginal rather than always seeing the ideal Euro-Canadian male figure who's of authority, right? So,
well, it might be encouraging to have more First Nation students, Métis students, entering those faculties as well.
Definitely.
If they know that the representation is there for them, that they don't feel so alone there as well.
Yeah, I have a couple of female friends, Larissa Wapuzian and Amanda Worm, who are actually in business, and they impress me all the time. I was an arts student, and I'm looking to go into journalism. I'm in Indian art studies. I'm really indecisive, but they just amaze me with how much they know about organization. When it comes to accounting, like financial things, they're amazing. And just because they're Aboriginal people may think that they aren't as smart just because that's the way we've been systemically trained, right? As people, to believe in we can't achieve things, or being told that long mm-hmm. enough, you start believing in that. But they're living proof that we're able to do that. We're able to do anything as any type of person of any race. We can do whatever we put our minds to. And I guess with the way that the relationship dynamic is now, we still have a process to go and motivate students to stay in school. We're having a huge deprivation of children in high school dropping out as Aboriginal people because they have no backbone. They have no person with a compassionate ear at school to listen to their stories and to hear them out. Therefore, they don't go to school because they don't have a place. Yeah, we forgot to say in introductions, I'm actually... I'm a First Nations member of Kowsis, as well as I'm registered at Member 2 Nova Scotia. And so I'm all the way over there with my family, as well as over here in Kowsis on my mother's side. So
you're a pretty national student.
I try my best. I went back home this summer, and it was lovely. The ocean's beautiful. So
yeah. How much time, Jim?
Oh, we have 2 minutes.
Okay. One of the things I want to talk about when we come back from the break, Jim actually raised it, and you did, is about education from elementary school into high school.
Right.
You know, and currently there is some curriculum developed, but I'd like to see what you two think about that and where that might go. And, Hanim, I think I'd like to also explore your feelings about this, since, you know, you're part of the student union mm-hmm. and why it was important for you that you and other members of the student union who may not be Indigenous to Canada, why it was important for you to stand by and support this petition.
For sure.
Okay.
So, like, based on, for example, my parents are not from Canada. Like, my parents are from Somalia, but I'm born in Canada, so I consider myself Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And I also consider myself... as a Canadian, I feel I need to learn more about the native people to this land. Mm-hmm. I need to know more about my neighbors. I need to know more about the people who were oppressed on this land, because just coming from a background as a East African Muslim woman, I know what oppression feels like. I know what discrimination feels like, racism, things like that. So to me, it's all about bridging the gaps and coming together, because the only way that we're going to get something done is that if we reach out to all different types of groups. Minorities need to stick together. We need to then branch out to other people who are not who are not discriminated against, and make them see the viewpoints that we see. And mm-hmm. the fact that this initiative is not only super important, but it's like it's fundamental to our education. And to me, that's the reason why I went to university, is to learn more. It's not to me personally, it's not about getting a degree to make buckets of money, but it's about learning about my surroundings around me and then contributing back to the society
community
the way I feel fit.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Before we head into the break, I'd just like to remind our listeners that we are all on Treaty 4 land at the moment. And we're going to hear from a really well-known success story after the break.
Hey, hey, hey.
to go is Buffy St. Marie.
Yeah.
And Capel Valley, Saskatchewan.
Awesome. I wanted to welcome you all back to Human Rights Radio on CJTR. We're coming back to our conversation about the petition for mandatory Indigenous Studies classes at the University of Regina with Hani Noor from the Amnesty International Group and from the Student Union, and also Julianne Herney. No, Julianne
Bowden-Herney. Yeah.
And Julianne's the young woman art student, right?
Yes, Indigenous Studies.
Indigenous Studies.
Yes.
Who decided we needed a petition and we needed to do this and get the whole university involved in understanding the history of Indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the president? What about Vian Timmins?
Vian Timmins, I actually haven't discussed it with her directly, but her Provost Tom Chase has emailed me, and we've made a meeting to meet next Wednesday and discuss it. And most of the authoritative deans around campus and people of the administration have been delighted to hear from me and with the work that I'm doing. So they're really supportive of it. So, yeah.
Okay, that's great. I'm going to kind of play devil's advocate. I read in the Leader Post article yesterday where you quoted, "I want people to open up and understand the reasons that we're still fighting today." So my question to you is, why do we have to do that? A lot of people feel it's that the past is the past, and you should leave the past there and move on to the future, because the past only drags up bad things, and then people get along and they can't get along and they start fighting, and it creates bad feelings.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you take a look at dysfunctional relationships, if you ignore the past, that, you know, if the victim chooses to ignore the past and being a victim and never acknowledging that with the person who's put them in that position, nothing ever gets better. So we're informed of our history. Everything that's been happening in Canada has been swept under the rug, and it's time to bring it up so we can start healing together. We've accumulated a debt of pain, of marginalization, through residential school, through 60 Scoop, through even right now issues that are coming up with education on reserves. Children are not getting the education they need because there's a lack of students. There's a lack of teachers, educators. There's no resources. They don't have textbooks. They have to photocopy textbooks.
A lot of them don't even have a school to go
or
to.
Or schools, yeah, like Attawapiskat had... actually, the person who spearheaded that, Shannon Kustachin, is actually an inspiration of mine. She was a youth advocate for children's rights, and I wrote her name on my wrist for a while to keep her in mind, and the heart that kid had, you know, she inspires me, and I have a lot of love for her. And so they're getting a school out there in 2013, but she had to fight for that on a reserve because no one knows about the conditions they're in. They're swarmed with drug and alcohol abuse, but not by choice. That's something societally imposed on them because of all the disparities. You just want to escape, right? So they don't know other ways to live. Also, going back to what I quoted, things like missing woman is a huge thing in our community here in Regina. We're actually searching for a young woman right now.
Right.
And that's a huge issue that impacts me. I was talking to my friend Shanoa Young, and we were ending up crying. It was really emotional because relatives go missing. My mom's involved in the missing woman searches around here. And it's something that hits home because those are sisters, those are mothers, those are aunties, you know, and it's a huge impact on our community that people don't care. The apathy needs to stop. Along with the apathy, Hannah was going to talk about our National Day of Action that
okay,
we had. So
yeah, so which was actually a fantastic event, in case you guys haven't heard about it. On February 1st, we had a National Day of Action at the University of Regina with the First Nations University of Canada Student Association. So this day of action was declared for students all across Canada to come on out and kind of advocate for a more affordable and accessible post-secondary education system. But here in Saskatchewan, what we were focusing on mainly was the 2% cap on the post-secondary student support program, which is the program, which is the mechanism in place that is used to fund status First Nation and Inuit students to attain a post-secondary education. So, like, this is just to let people know that this is a treaty right. I mean, when folks signed the treaties back in 1874.
Yep. Yay! Got it.
You did it.
I got it. So the right to education was instilled in these treaties. So what the federal government has is a requirement, and they need to fund post-secondary education to these students. So the problem that we see here in Canada right now is that there is a 2% cap on the program, which mm-hmm. means the program can only increase by 2% when applications are rolling in at 6%, more than that. So it's like more than 10,000 students across Canada are being denied funding.
Yep.
And these are students who have a high school diploma in hand, who have an entrance acceptance into a post-secondary institution, but are unable to go to school because they are denied funding. So that was one of the things that we were focusing on at our day of action here at the U of R at the First Nations University of Canada. So the other thing about this program is that when we met with the Canadian Federation of Students, the U of R and the First Nations University are all members of the Canadian Federation of Students, and we also had a lobby week where we went on the Hill in Ottawa and lobbied to senators and members of Parliament from Saskatchewan, and we talked about this program and how it needs to have more funding. And interesting enough, though, a lot of MPs and senators, conservative and liberal, well, Ralph Goodale, which is the one liberal, were okay with this initiative. Like, mm-hmm. They were more sympathetic to hearing that than reducing tuition fees. So it was the one thing that we pushed forward, and we got a lot of, we got support for, but it turns out it's kind of empty words. I mean, they say, oh, this is a great idea, but they won't go ahead and just fund the program. Like, you know what I mean? It's like,
so the response was, we think it was great.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
So is there going to be any follow-up?
Oh, for sure. Like, ever since this day of action mm-hmm. was geared, this was the big follow-up, right?
Oh, okay.
And we've sent letters, and hopefully we're going to schedule some more meetings. And also the budget's coming out both provincially and federally, so you best be knowing that we'll be raising some noise
good.
About that. As well.
Hell yeah.
Okay. So if my my 18-year-old son is going to start university next fall,
mm-hmm.
And I imagine it might take a little bit longer to get this instituted, what type of classes do you expect him to be taking? You know, you talked about earlier about it being sort of geared towards whatever faculty
mm-hmm.
He's going to be in. But what kind of information do you want a young person to learn about going into university, regardless of what faculty they're going into
okay.
and what they'll be studying? Is it like basically local information, local historical information, or national, like mm-hmm. different groups across the country, because there are so many different groups and so many different
yeah.
traditions and cultures. There's a lot of similarities, but we know that it's not all the same. And what about on a global scale?
Well, definitely. In the classrooms, what I've learned in Indigenous Studies 100 was a local history, as well as kind of a general broad perspective on the issues. Like, they list out the issues, they list out the documents, but there's a more in-depth information that goes into it on things such as the Doctrine of Discovery, which declared Canada incognito and terra nullius and terra incognito, sorry. And that means that anybody there who isn't Christian is not human. So we were declared as First Nations people and Native people of Canada that we weren't people. In fact, we were savages, so they could take over, overrun our land, and invade. So there's that. And then there's things like the Indian Act, residential school, like I said about three times already.
Yeah, the importance of that impact
yeah.
on your lives, not only back then, but today.
It's mm-hmm. intergenerational. Like, my grandmother went to residential school, and so as it goes down the lineage and generations in our family, we still have to deal with things such as the hierarchy, right? So that's kind of what I'm dealing with right now. But instead of fighting it, I want to be it to become part of this operation, a part of this initiative, get cooperation. But there's going to be a few stubborn people. But when it comes to talking to politicians and things like that, people have been pretty open-minded mm-hmm. about it. Yeah. I guess they have to be, right, or else we're just going to get more angry. We had a meeting recently between Stephen Harper and Sean Altio, First Nations AFN leader, and agreeing that we were going to get these promises fulfilled, right? So we need to see that action. I want to see as much as everyone else wants to see that action happen instead of just empty words. So also with the class, I've heard from lots of people that their minds open up because they haven't been exposed to this truth. About thousands of students leave high school without any knowledge of the culture or anything, without it being just a single little section in their history on Treaty 4, right? So we bring up the documents of Treaty 4, which is all happy and everything at the moment, but you don't learn how betrayed those promises were and how much we have to work on when it comes to that. Things like childcare apply to everybody. There's a lot of single mothers in university. They need daycares. They need people to look after their children. Even children in high school need after-school programs, and Stephen Harper's government is cutting funding for that. So we're going to have more children on the streets who have nothing to do except maybe, you know, bash in a car window because it's fun, or egg people's houses. So it's not only just about Aboriginal people, it's about all our children. And I feel like with the resistance, it's going to take them, like I said at the annual general meeting, it's going to take the resistance to be scared shitless until they actually realize, oh, remember those brown people who tried making a change and harmonizing our groups? Well, we should have listened to them because now my kids has nothing else to do, right? And there's the indigenizing knowledge will be able to relax children. It'll be able to welcome them into classrooms more. And teachers have the honor to polish that jewel, right? To make that child shiny, new, to have hopes and be able to fulfill those hopes. But we need the resources on those reserves. We need to be bringing kids into the urban centers with them having a place in society. We need them to have residence here. They need to have a purpose. Yes, we have companies promoting jobs for them and everything, but the lack of opportunity and the lack of motivation is resulting in no one coming to that, right? So it's not a personal choice that they're in these situations. It's society, and that's the systemic way of it.
We were talking about politicians here with Stephen Harper and parliamentarians and all the rest of it, and this is where I think that your initiative is absolutely necessary, because these politicians and parliamentarians only react to opinions mm-hmm. of their people back home. And if the people back home are ignorant of the facts, then the politicians and parliamentarians are free to go on and do business as usual. Mm-hmm. So that's really what I think is the most important part of your initiative. It's making people aware.
Mm-hmm. So also the expansion of the initiative has come into place. I've been emailing, I only emailed half of Canada, about 21 universities. So Dalhousie, Trent, St. Mary's, Memorial in PEI, also, where else, Bishops, McMaster, U of M, U of C, UBC, U of S, and the Prince Albert campuses have contacted me with their support. So they're working on making this initiative in their communities also. So you'll be hearing more about this in the future.
This is very exciting.
Yeah, so back home in Halifax, my friend Killa Antesio is actually the student union rep, our president over there, so she brought it up between her and St. Mary's because they're a really small province, so they come together to deal with things, and she's really, really enthusiastic about it. She's been talking to me about how beautiful this sounds and how she just, there it was only 8 people who showed up, but those 8 people matter, right? Just like when I go out to classrooms, I'm only fighting for those 3 signatures, not for all 30 to sign, right? So,
What about elementary and high schools? Currently, Saskatchewan has a curriculum mm-hmm. set up for teachers to use when they're doing their history or whatever classes, but it's not mandatory. Mm-hmm. It's up to the teachers if they want to do it or not. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that it should be mandatory, of course. I mean, the idea of coexistence is going to become really awkward with the demographic expanding the way it is, right?
Mm-hmm. And are you talking about the Aboriginal population growth in Saskatchewan,
yes,
in particular?
So in Saskatchewan, my uncle Cadmus Delorme actually harps on this a lot. He harps that there's going to be more Aboriginal children, and our babies are having babies, right? And it's not just us, it's all other people having children, but there's going to be a critical time where we need to understand our neighbors, right?
Yes.
Like Hanum said, mm-hmm. in order to move forward together, if we want our children to be successful, if we want our children to have open minds, we need to start promoting that at a really early age. So we can't be still teaching in elementary schools that Indians wear feathered hats and leather and everything else and live in longhouses and teepees and eat bannock when we in fact live in houses. We live in shitty houses in inner city, and we don't belong there. We belong in big houses. We belong in really healthy economically ways of life, and it's just something that's been prevented because no one hears about it. No one goes into the inner city. I've had the advantage to go work with at-risk youth in our inner city with an after-school program, and those children have lots to say. They've just been so corrupted by this idea of, not hip-hop, but this graffiti-type inner-city gangster image that's imposed on them when really they can go to school outside of that. You know, we have limited these people so much that, like, I grew up middle class, thankfully, but as well, I'm able to go back into my community and understand why they're there, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't just grow up whitewashed and kind of blind to the situation. Once I came to university, I was able to look back and understand that, but how much they're deprived of that. Our public schools are better known for incorporating culture instead of our Catholic schools, but why is that, right? I went to a Catholic school as well, and so I had to pray every day. You know, I wasn't able to pray in my language or say creator. I had to say God, things like that. Same with my high school. I went to a Lutheran high school, so I had to go to church every day. It was huge, and we need to be promoting that culture more. It adds so much more, a higher value to education, so people want to go to class. You know, we have to motivate these kids to go to class.
Mm-hmm. To show the respect to every culture and give them the space to have what they need to
have as far as
their spirituality goes. And
we have also have a lot of engage
and do that. Absolutely.
Yes.
I remember when I was at school and when they created a safe space for prayer for Muslim students.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
It's no big deal. Like, it's really no skin off our backs to create that opportunity just like everybody else has.
And you create a safe environment.
That's more like,
exactly. And people are willing to come together to understand different cultures. And there you just have a more peaceful coexisting society, right? And community. So, also going off of what Jules said about the Aboriginal population growing at such a fast rate, but in terms of like the economic progress that this could be brought to this country. So, some stats were done by the Canadian Federation of Students that the Aboriginal community will contribute over $400 billion into the Canadian economy in 20 years.
Right.
I mean, the only way that we can do this is if we have an educated population that will then go out and get jobs and then go. And then the one thing I really have known and have learned this past year is that Aboriginal communities and people and students are willing to take their degrees and take their learnings, but bring it back to their communities. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just, it's so fascinating. And so it's like very heartwarming to see, because then you go out and better your people and you go from there. I mean, it's just, it's a win-win. And I don't know why the federal government is not going to fund post-secondary education, because it can bring such a phenomenal response to the Canadian economy.
So what I see here are two issues. One issue is educating non-Aboriginals in the schools to our full cultural history, not just the white history.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Number two, making a space, an educational space for all children to learn about that history and creating that feeling of safety and belonging for Aboriginal children to come into the school and feel like, well, it's about me too. My history lesson, the science lessons, the health lessons, all of that is all inclusive and I belong here too. Mm-hmm. So those are the two issues that I see right now are fundamental to having these courses become mandatory. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also, with the rates that we have of Aboriginal people being incarcerated, the government's spending more money on the incarceration and building of jails rather than sending them to university.
Exactly.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. If we want to say that this is something of the past, why is that there?
And they seem very firmly headed down that road.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
How much time, Jim?
2 minutes.
Okay. To wrap it up, let's talk about contact information so that anyone who's listening to this show can contact either one of you, and if they want to sign this petition or get copies of the petition, how do they go about doing this?
All right, so online we have a Facebook group, called the Students Initiative to Change On Campus Racism. You can join the group, and the petition is also online, so I've made it available for all reserves to sign. People outside of the community, across Canada, and even globally, they can, as global citizens, sign this petition on CanadianPetition.com and search the Students Initiative on there. I think that's about it. My email is JULES_HERNEY@hotmail.com. And you can email me with any concerns, if you want to participate, if you want to distribute it amongst your councils or your student body. That would be great, as long as the students are 18 plus. That's
great.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
Cool. So, if any students are out there listening, you can stop by the Students Union offices located on the second floor of the Riddell Center. We're open Monday to Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. We have petitions right at the front desk. And if you have any questions, you can always contact me at finance@ursu.ca. And I look forward to hearing from you guys.
Yep. Thank you so much. This has been a very well needed show.
Oh,
yep. Appreciate your
great dialogue. I really appreciate it, Mona.
I'm super excited to be here.
Thank you for joining us, ladies.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."